This is Money Talk.
Welcome back to Money Talk. We are going to be talking for the rest of the hour to Professor Lucian Bebchuk, who is author of Pay Without Performance, along with Jesse Fried, The Unfulfilled Promise of Executive Compensation. Professor Bebchuk is from the Harvard Law School and has been following executive compensation for lo these many, an expert on the subject, widely quoted, and I'm sure he has some very interesting thoughts about executive compensation and corporate governance, and that's what we're going to chat about. Are you with us, Professor?
Yes, good to be here.
Okay, glad we could finally connect. We've been playing a little bit of internet tag here for a while. But the SEC, let's start with the new rules that the Securities and Exchange Commission has come up with to at least make executive compensation more transparent. What is your view of those rules? What's the good, the bad, and the indifferent?
It's really a major step forward in the book that you mentioned. Jesse Fried and I focused on the lack of transparency and the camouflage of pay as one of the big problems. Companies have for long camouflaged both the total amount of pay as well as the extent to which pay is linked to performance. And the new rules will very much address this problem. So, that's the good dimension.
Mm-hmm.
If you're asking for something that is indifferent, I would say there is an aspect that is insufficient, namely investors still lack the power, the voting power that is necessary to make an effective use of the new information that they will have.
Mm-hmm. So investors may know more, but that doesn't empower them very much more. Is this a function of or a result of so many investors now being indirectly involved in corporate ownership and not directly? In other words, they own mutual funds or their money is in pension funds, and they are mute observers more than voting stockholders.
I think that it's to a large extent a function of the fact that the institutional investors, those public pension funds and mutual funds and so forth, have limited power to influence what happens relative to what happens in the United Kingdom. So the power of the shareholders, and that includes the institutional investors, which are playing a larger and larger role in the capital markets, the power is limited. Their ability to replace the board is much more limited than investors realize, and their power to introduce changes in corporate governance arrangements is more limited than many of the listeners of your show realize.
What can individual shareholders then? What can they do? What powers can be brought to bear when we do have the kinds of excesses that we've seen?
I think what would be necessary is to have a change in the rules of the system, like the change we had with respect to disclosure. But the big reform that still remains is the reform of corporate elections.
Mm-hmm.
And what's necessary for that is to have rules that enable shareholders to place candidates on the ballot, rules that make voting confidential, voting by secret ballot, rules that prevent directors from being elected when a majority of the votes are withheld or even cast against, rather than for the director. Various changes of this kind are necessary.
All right. Of course, on the other side of the coin, those corporations that have been keeping a nose pretty clean might say, wait a minute, we play by the rules. We try to be honest and above board. We're not Enron. We're not WorldCom. We're not monkeying around with options. We're good guys. And why should we be saddled with more regulation and more government interference? We'll deal with that question and some others with Professor Lucian Bebchuk right after these words on Money Talk. Stay with us.
This is Money Talk.
Yes, I'm asleep. Aches and pains used to keep me up all the time, but now new Advil PM is changing all that. If I was awake, I'd leap for joy, but I'm not. I'm asleep. See, new Advil PM combines the multi-pain relieving power of Advil with a non-habit-forming sleep aid. Nothing's proven stronger on tough nighttime pain. I'd shout it from the hilltops, but I don't want to wake myself up.
New Advil PM. Stop hurting and start sleeping.
Use only as directed.
You may be sitting there right now wondering how you're going to make it through the day. Do you worry yourself sick, beat yourself up, or put yourself down? This isn't the real you. You used to be happy and have confidence and dreams, remember? Well, it's time to get it back. You owe it to yourself to pick up the phone and call for a powerful free tape that can help you get your life back. I'm Lucinda Bassett, founder of the Midwest Center for Stress and Anxiety. Please, let me help you help yourself. Call 1-800-500-2001. That's 1-800-500-2001. 1-800-500-2001.
You're listening to America's Money Program, Bob Brinker's Money Talk. Our toll-free number, 1-800-934-2221.
Are you making too many trips to the bathroom? Super Prostate Formula reduces nighttime urination and improves sleep. We're so confident that you'll be thrilled with Super Prostate Formula that you can try it free. That's right, free. So call now for your free 30-day trial of Super Prostate Formula and reclaim control. Just pay shipping and handling. Call now. 1-800-337-4565. 1-800-337-4565. 1-800-337-4565.
If you have allergies, discover Allivert. The instant it touches your tongue, it bursts into action. And you know allergy relief is on its way. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet and comes in two great flavors, original refreshing mint and citrus burst. Get the allergy relief you need to keep going. Try quick-dissolving Allivert. Experience the relief. Use as directed.
How long will I be in chemotherapy?
What should I ask my doctor?
What are the side effects?
Will I lose my hair?
When will I start to feel better?
What about alternate therapies?
Who can I turn to for help?
If you're facing chemotherapy, it's easy to feel overwhelmed. But now it's easier to find answers in one place. Chemotherapy.com. From different types of treatment to side effects, to the right questions to ask along the way. The answers are at your fingertips at www.chemotherapy.com. Your complete chemotherapy guide.
Hello?
Opportunity calling.
I thought you knocked.
That's a cliche.
What do you have?
An opportunity to win.
What's it called?
Sony Card Wish It Win It.
So first I wish?
And then you have a chance to win.
Win what?
$10,000 worth of Sony Entertainment.
That's huge.
That's Sony Card Wish It Win It.
What do I do now?
Go to SonyCardWin.com/bonus to create your personal wish list.
I wish for Sony Electronics, CDs, DVDs, and games.
Go now.
Can't wait.
There's a Sony card winner each month.
So there's a chance?
That you'll be the one.
To wish and then win?
That's why it's called Wish It, Win It from Sony Card. The card that earns points towards Sony rewards with every use. Go to SonyCardWin.com/bonus. No purchase necessary. Offer ends 12/31/06. Void where prohibited. Open only to U.S. residents 18 or older as of date of entry. Odds of winning depend on number of entries. For official rules and alternative method of entry, go to SonyCardWin.com. Sponsored by Sony Electronics, Inc. And remember, life's more entertaining with Sony Card.
Want to get to the next level of your career? Earn a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix. It's education designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn your degree in 2 to 3 years. At over 170 campuses, they offer programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix at 1-800-853-4433. Offer not valid in Tennessee. Programs vary by campus. That's 1-800-853-4433.
I was lucky enough to find out about Laurel Langmire. Since then, I own 16 investment properties. I have a C Corp, an S Corp. I have six LLCs.
Free yourself from the daily grind of your 9-to-5 job.
My experience in the first 4 months, I walked away with almost $300,000.
Laurel Langmire has personally coached hundreds of entrepreneurs into financial freedom.
Laurel and her team blew me away, and I went, I got to work with this lady.
Laurel teaches you how to live in a wealth cycle and stay there. A master of customized one-on-one guidance, Laurel Langmire can place you on the road to financial independence.
Hi, I'm Laurel Langmire. Creating wealth is not as difficult as you may think. If you're ready to turn your financial dreams into reality, then I want you to have my Extreme Money Makeover CD for free.
Call now for your free Money Makeover CD. 1-800-508-5868.
People are really looking for something like this, and Laurel certainly has a solution.
Call now for your free Money Makeover CD. 1-800-508-5868. 1-800-508-5868.
This is Money Talk.
Welcome back. Bill Flanagan here for Bob Brinker. 1-800-934-2221. We're talking to Professor Lucian Bebchuk, who is an author, along with Jesse Fried, of Pay Without Performance, The Unfulfilled Promise of Executive Compensation, and a well-noted commentator and critic of executive compensation. We might as well get the plug in, Professor. You have a new paperback edition coming out of that book, do you not?
Yes. Thanks for mentioning it.
All right, we'll get that plug in. When will that be available?
I think it's available right now, so after the show, people can...
Okay, they can hop on Amazon or whatever their choice online or offline book store is, and have a look at this very important book, which has been widely noted, New York Times and many, many other places. What I was asking before the break is, do we really need new rules on top of what we already have? A lot of companies say, well, wait a minute, we got plenty of rules already, and I keep our nose clean at my company, and just because XYZ companies are really being crazy with compensations, no reason we should all be burdened with this. But is there? What do you think about that?
The rules that I have in mind are rules that are not going to impose a cost across the board on all companies, making directors accountable, namely making it possible for shareholders to remove directors, is not going to impose any costs on boards that are performing well when shareholders are satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
It's going only to impose some discipline in those situations where boards are underperforming and shareholder dissatisfaction runs high.
Okay, how do we measure director performance?
Well, that's why we should leave it to the shareholders. They are the ultimate owners. They are the market is the one that should judge. What we should try to do is just give power to investors to make those decisions. And I'm not in favor of anyone like regulator or anyone from the outside deciding what's a good or bad performance or what's good or bad decision-making process.
You're talking about more empowerment for the stockholders.
Right.
Which is
exactly right.
Technically there already, but it isn't really being exercised.
Right. It's the idea of the corporate elections is really a fiction rather than reality as it's functioning right now. In a recent study, I look at the numbers of contested elections in the past decade. And it turns out that on average, there are about 10 or 12 cases of electoral challenges a year among thousands of publicly traded companies.
Hmm.
So the risk of facing an electoral challenge right now is practically negligible for directors. And when you look at this, there are two possible explanations. One is that shareholders are universally happy with performance.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is that there are some impediments that legal arrangements put in place that make it difficult to mount those challenges. And I think this is really what's happening, and this is what we should change.
Okay. How could this be changed without bending too many noses out of joint, as it were?
I think that the steps are fairly straightforward and to me also unobjectionable. It's striking that we have not had them until now. So take, for example, secret ballot.
Uh-huh.
We think that a secret ballot is a basic element of elections in general. But
sure.
In the corporate context, the lion's share of companies don't have election by secret ballot. There is really no reason that I can see why corporate election should not be by secret ballot. So
mm-hmm.
That's one simple change that should be made. Secondly, in elections in general, we have not only the incumbent but also the challenger on the ballot. But in the corporate election, we have this unusual state of affairs under which the incumbents have their names on the ballots, but a challenger needs to send their own proxy cards to investors, which is costly and tricky and
mm-hmm.
discourages challengers. And that's, again, something that can be changed without any additional cost. Companies are sending proxy cards to investors, as your listeners, you know, they generally
mm-hmm.
get them. And all that is necessary is that in some circumstances, when investors satisfy some threshold requirements, their candidate should be on the ballot as well.
We've seen cases where individual shareholders accumulate an awful lot of stock, and they seem to be able to make boards jump through hoops awfully quickly. Heinz, General Motors, other companies where corporate raiders, we call them once, but now they've got more noble titles, but they are buying chunks of companies, and they seem to be able to get responses awfully quickly.
I don't know whether they respond. I mean, obviously,
they can
put some pressure, but if you compare what we have with what happens in the UK, the difference is striking. In the UK, institutional investors have greater power. They can, for example, whenever they want, they can call a special meeting and replace the board.
Huh.
And that means that when they approach the board behind the scenes, so to speak, informally, they get much more attention and they get their wishes heard much more quickly than it happens in the U.S. In the U.S., it is an uphill battle.
Implicit in all this is rubber stamp or even indifferent or, I hate to say it, dumb directors. What do we do to make sure or try to get better directors on boards?
I don't think that the problem is with the quality of directors. It's quite possible that we have very good directors. They are among the best and the brightest. The problem is with their incentives.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that when there is a system where the incentives are not functioning well, where they are not structured correctly, even when you have talented individuals, the system produces distorted results. And what we have in the corporate context in the U.S. is a system in which directors don't have sufficiently powerful incentives to focus on the interest of shareholders. That's the basic problem, not with the quality.
I see. So what kinds of incentives could you suggest?
We return to the issue of making directors more dependent on shareholders. If directors know that shareholders can remove them when they are dissatisfied, then it wouldn't even need to happen. Just the knowledge that shareholders have this power in the background can make, a big difference.
What about, here's the nub, and the compensation committees and those directors that are involved in compensation. Obviously, they're under a lot of pressure, and the first thing that goes wrong with a company when there's an executive who seems to be lavishly overcompensated, you say, well, how did you fellows and gals come up with a compensation package like this? It doesn't seem to have anything to do with performance.
I think that as long as we don't fix this basic problem of making the board as a whole accountable to shareholders through strengthening the election process, compensation committees don't really have sufficient incentive to perform. What they do have is they have an incentive not to step out of kind of the general practice.
Mm-hmm.
They have an incentive not to do something that the media, that you, or the shareholders can focus on as especially egregious. But if they just kind of muddle along and produce something which is not the best for the shareholders, but it's defensible because it's part of the general practice, they feel very, very safe. That's not the same as a system in which they have strong incentives to try to get the best deal for shareholders. Think about the following example. There is there are some features of compensation arrangements that people have been criticizing for a long time, and there are some changes that seem obviously needed, and nonetheless they don't happen. So, for example, clawback provisions. Those are provisions that enable the company to reverse compensation, to get it back, when it turns out that the compensation was based on accounting numbers that had to be restated subsequently.
Like Xerox, for example, or many other companies that restated their figures following some rather unpleasant information coming to the fore in recent years.
And to me and to many others, clawback provisions are a no-brainer. They should be there regardless of whether the executives are to blame for the restatement, because the reason to reverse the compensation is not because the executives were at fault in misstating the numbers, but simply because the facts were different.
Mm-hmm.
And the compensation was based on numbers which turn out to be incorrect.
In other words, they benefit from somebody else's mistakes, even though they may not have had anything to do with it.
Right. It's the basic principle is if it wasn't earned, it should be returned. But same way that if your employer, Bill, sent you an extra check by mistake, without you being at fault, they'll ask you to give the money back.
Of course. That's never happened, by the way. It's amazing how efficient certain factors of accounting can be, and yet it seems in corporate circles they never seem to get it right.
So take, for example, this arrangement. It seems so straightforward. The media and investors have been asking it for a long time. Sometimes reporters would call me and say, we have heard that some companies are beginning to use those provisions. Do you know of any examples? Nonetheless, this is not catching on. It's not happening. And the reason is that given that other companies are also not doing it, compensation committees can feel fairly safe in not adopting it for their own executive because, you know, there is the protection of being part of a large crowd that doesn't do it.
Right. Protection of a large crowd. The fixing of stock options by picking on a nice date when the stock was low, there we've got over 80 companies, I don't know, and still counting. And the SEC seems to be contenting itself with having the companies conduct their own investigations into this rather than outsiders. Safety in numbers doesn't seem to be working too well for shareholders in that case. What do you think of the SEC under Cox? Do you think that there's a little more teeth, a little more muscle than previously?
I think that the SEC is now acting in a unified fashion. So Cox has been able kind of to operate again by consensus, and he has been able to use this to pass the reform concerning disclosure of compensation that I think is a good step. I hope he will be able to use this to continue pressing with additional reforms like the shareholder access to the ballot reform that we were discussing, doing things like enabling shareholders to vote on compensation arrangements, tightening their reporting disclosures with respect to options in a way that would prevent backdating in the future, and additional necessary reforms.
Okay, let me ask you. I go out on a limb here. I think that stock options stink. I don't think that stock options should be allowed. Period. Case closed. I think there are other ways of compensating and restricted stock and many other ways. And I don't think that stock options work out for the to the good of anybody except those people who get them. What is your opinion on stock options in general?
I think actually that we have been overreacting. And the devil is in the details with respect to options and with respect to other forms of compensation. The problem is that designers of compensation arrangements have designed option plans in a way that was harmful to investors with backdating, with short-term unwinding, with a lot of other aspects. But options fundamentally are a good instrument which can be used well. And we would make a mistake if we shift to other forms of compensation because they can be they are vulnerable to the same types of problems. Take, for example, restricted stock, which many people I'm more enthusiastic about. So first of all, you have to understand that a restricted stock is really an option. It's an option with an exercise price of zero. Mm-hmm. That's what a restricted stock means.
Right.
So what it means is that some aspect of options that various people, including we in our Pay Without Performance book criticized, are actually worse with restricted stock than with options. The one problem with options is that executives can make substantial gains even when they don't perform well relative to their peers.
And that point, I have to interrupt, Professor. I'm sorry, we're going to have to go. But we've been talking to Lucian Bebchuk, and his book is Pay Without Performance, The Unfulfilled Promise of Executive Compensation. The new version in paperback is available now. Thank you, Professor.
Thanks a lot.
You've been enlightening, and we'll have to talk to you again sometime. We'll be back right after this.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Money Talk.